Welcome to DC Comics News Weekly Podcast. This is episode number 186. I'm your host, Seth Singleton, and I am not alone. I am joined by you, but more importantly for me at this moment, the amazing Mr. Brad Filicki. He keeps me on my toes. He's always finely fashioned. How you doing today, sir?
Good. Long time no see.
I know, man. I've been good. I've been busy. I've been a good busy. It's frustrating because I can't do all the stuff I want to do, even though I'm getting to do stuff I want to do. So I'm torn between wants. And I would say it's a perfect introduction to this week. I'm torn between wants because I really love the fact that I wanted to get on today and talk with you. I'm going to struggle with the fact that our opening stories are a series of losses that we've had recently. Some great people who have touched, I can't even count how many lives, with their ability to play a role in this great tradition of these stories we love. I'm going to start off by talking about Phyllis Coates. She's the star of Adventures of Superman, TV's first Lois Lane. She passed away at 96 years old. It was reported by her daughter to The Hollywood Reporter. And she had 24 total episodes from 52 to 53. She was the first embodiment of Lois Lane. It's pretty amazing. Brad, I was just curious what your thoughts were when you heard the news or just talking about it now.
Today. Yeah, it's always sad, but, 96 years is pretty amazing, and we should all be so lucky, she had a full life. Sorry as always to see her go. I don't think she gets enough credit, because I think that this version of Superman and Lois Lane were the introduction for a lot of people's to the character of Lois Lane and Superman. And you don't really hear her name get thrown around so much like you do, like Margot Kidder. So, hopefully she can get the respect that she deserves, going forward.
Certainly. I mean, that's always one of the things that's a challenge. You have pioneers and trailblazers, and then there are others who follow the path who can do more, as it points out in the article that was picked up by a comic book that we're referencing. It mentions she had an opportunity to sign on for a second season, had an opportunity to do another project. But in that, first season, 24 episodes, she was able to do some amazing work. And then who can follow after Margot Kidder? We have other examples of those who could say, oh, let me give you my take on Lois Lane. But sometimes the trailblazers don't get noticed as much when there's a newer version, a newer take. But as you pointed out, some recognition deserved for those who take the first chance, to say, okay, let me give you a first shot at what I think this character in 2D looks like in a major project like this. Someone who brought 2D characters to life for me in a way that changed everything I thought I understood about comics was writer and artist Keith Giffen. This is someone who changed for me some really fun things where I thought to myself, this is comics? This is great. I mean, anyone who brings to life a character like Ambush Bug is immediately going to, have some great things for me. But you're not here to just listen to me. Brad, I was curious what your thoughts are just reflecting on yet another great passing.
He was one of my favorite writers, especially DC writers back in the that post-crisis sweet spot where you had Man of Steel and George Perez's Wonder Woman, but you also had things like Justice League International, which was one of my, probably still is one of my all-time favorite superhero comics. And that was all him. The humor, the way that he could weave in different characters was kind of groundbreaking. I don't think we'd have a Joss Whedon if we didn't have a Keith Giffen and Justice League International. No one could do it better. And I'm glad you brought up Ambush Bug, because Ambush Bug was always such an underappreciated character. I was so glad when they brought him back in Suicide Squad a few years ago. I mean, those two alone, he would be right up there in my upper tier comics writer. So losing him was a huge loss, and it kind of came out of nowhere. It was kind of a shock to me. I just wasn't expecting that. So, but yeah, I mean, what a loss. He's one of those writers that I almost feel such a connection to, that it's almost like losing a family member. You know, I probably one of the biggest losses since Kevin Conroy for me when it comes to the comic world, and George Perez as well. And we've had so many losses, it seems like, this year. So it's just a shame. He was just absolutely one of my faves, and I'm gonna miss him terribly. I want to go and reread Ambush Bug and Justice League International now. What about you?
It does make me want to go back and read those comics. Justice League International changed what I thought I understood about, you know, superheroes. It was such an irreverent take. This is the guy who, if Steve was here, I'm sure he would be shouting it out. One punch, right? Yep. One punch.
Yep. Oh,
suddenly you have this legendary moment between Batman and Guy Gardner. We had the Bwahaha. We had, you know, the blue and gold, and a wonderful love of the irreverence. I also know it doesn't get mentioned as much, but I felt he played a really pivotal role in the 52 series, which for me, I ended up collecting, you know, the volumes, and Ambush Bug again gets to make an appearance in some wonderful ways in there. But I think he really caught me for a moment when he actually clued me into this idea while reading the Breakdown series for Justice League and Justice League Europe, where he has one of the characters going, yeah, you know, it's pretty amazing with all the stuff going on. It's like there's some writer who just had a terrible dream and decided to throw us all in it. No, for all the stuff we've got going on, it'd take a whole team of writers to make them. You know, he was doing this. He was poking, you know, even in the midst of all these terrible things going on. Max Lord gets shot, and there's all these things happening where it's breaking down, literally, as the series describes. And he brought it to life in such wondrous ways. I felt his hand on certain things. Like, you know, anytime there was a comedic reference, I pretty much was certain it was him. Whether it was Invasion or any other project where I'll go through and I'll go, huh, that sounds like Giffen, right?
Invasion was another one that I really enjoyed, I think, more than most people seem to. I don't know how much of a impact it had or how much people liked it. It seemed to kind of get a lot of shade thrown at it, but that was a fun series for me too. I'm glad you brought that one up.
Pleasure. Yeah, it was actually something, because I was brought into the Flash comics and it started tracking back and found a couple. There were some issues that referenced a major plot line for Wally West and the idea of his dad being like an agent and dying, maybe tragically, when they released the I think it was the anti-meta bomb. And there was this attack on metas. And anywho, it sort of like opened my eyes to like, oh, I missed this. I was just at the end, like whatever happened before, I should find out about. Later, going back and tracking down a lovely collected edition that I could read through and just have a lot of fun. And yes, his fingerprints of humor. I mean, we can also talk about his work for Marvelous Competitors, creating someone like Rocky Raccoon. I mean, you know, anybody who can walk on both sides of the aisle and be like, yeah, look, I can create legendary characters. I can come back to DC and do Lobo. This is someone who was instrumental in shaping not only characters, but storylines and narratives. I mean, even recently, doing some really amazing stuff. And as you point out, this one hurts the most because I remember I was just getting into comics when I started reading JLI and things like that. And it sunk in. It made those episodes, those issues feel just they ingrained in me in some way. I wish I could describe better, but I really felt it.
I really think, you know, it's funny that you should say that you started reading DC with him, because he was one of the ones that got me reading DC. Because I had started out, I just started out with Marvel. I don't know exactly how that happened. It just kind of happened that way, because I started with G.I. Joe. That was Marvel. So so it took me a little bit longer to discover DC, and Keith Giffen was one of the reasons why I was like, oh yeah, I'm a fan of this as well. And that was, a lot of that was because of Justice League International.
And for me, it was also such a fun little comparison because I got into DC because of The Flash. A friend got me the comic, my first Flash comic as a birthday present. And then I saw The Flash was in JLI and I'm like, hey, wait a minute. He pops in there a little bit. Like, hold on. And he's kind of goofy and a bit, of, not always the brightest bulb. Okay, let's see what's, it was such a twist because I'm reading the serious version of him in one comic and this hilarious sort of workplace comedy with him in another one. And we have him to thank for that. We have him to make us go, yeah, when do we get to see that version of the Justice League one day make it to the screen? And a recognition for all the fans who laughed and loved it as much as we did. I would like to say that's the only story we have about those passing, but we had two more. Really amazing. I mean, it's like I hear names and suddenly I start trying to imagine the catalog of when I've seen, you know, glimpses of them in title pages. Because another one that I didn't really see coming, and I'm glad you pointed that out with Keith Giffen, you know, with Perez, we had a little bit of an announcement. There was a bit of time for fans to process. But with Keith Giffen and now also Steve Irwin passing away at 63. Deathstroke, the Terminator artist, co-creator of Checkmate, which is just such a fun concept to enjoy in the different iterations we've had it. I mean, recently it was a player in things that had happened around the New 52 and other events. And more recently, I mean, it's amazing to think about these people who have come along and just put their imprint on comics. What were your thoughts in the regards to the news and Steve passing?
Yeah, it brought to mind the early Checkmate. Like I remember, and that was probably I could be wrong, but I think it was in the late 80s, or no, might have been mid 80s. I remember a Checkmate series, I believe, that was really good. But it was a lot different than the Checkmate that we've gotten, you know, since Infinite Crisis. It's a little bit, it was different than that. Now I want to go try to find those books. But this was really unexpected as well. I mean, you know, that came as kind of a shock. And he always was one of those artists that I respected, but didn't really dive into so much. And now I feel like I really have to. Like, I want to go back. Like I said, I want to go back and rediscover that Checkmate series. And Deathstroke is such an important character. As is, so I'd like to see, go back and rediscover his work on that as well. In other words, it's a shame we're just losing too many comics legends this year. It's been rough.
It has, and I think, you know, I think other than, you know, our first story where you said, hey, at 96, you know, it's hard to get mad at not, you know, considering that being a full life, but 63 feels short. 63 feels like we could have gotten maybe another 10 or 20 years of amazing projects from someone who was still creating. And I think that's the one thing. If someone still wants to pick up the pen, sit down at the table, whatever their art is, and keep creating, it's like, man, I don't want them to stop. I feel like, you know, that desire to get back up at the table every day should be a reason to get another day. And that's just a silly little take for me. But you were right, just talking about Steve Irwin, it's an interesting thing to think about. Not one, I mean, Deathstroke, such an iconic image, right? Such a really fun character. But Checkmate was such an interesting idea. I came across some collected books through one of the lines that's been doing different sales. And it's like, oh, hey, this is a great way to get my hands on something like that. It's already all collected. I don't have to hunt for missing issues and I can just enjoy a great story. And reading through that and understanding this whole process, you know, you've got the black and white, you've got this whole chess mentality. There's these very strict structures, but it's all introduced in a very methodical way so that you only know as much as they need you to know when they need you to know. And that feels like the tone of the entire project. And it's a great feeling to create. And when you do it successfully, I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to like put those pages together and go, hey, that is, you know, but like you said, for anyone who wants to know what that's like, go pick up the book. You can find the collections out there and share with us your favorite stories that you discovered afterwards, because you might find us reminiscing at some point down the line, like, hey, I finally did get a chance to check that out. And let me tell you what I find, because I love with comics, there's always threads from the past to the present. There's constantly someone pulling up some great thing about it. And one more reminder of how the past is constantly, you know, reflecting the present. If you were to turn on Batman the Animated Series today and watch an episode featuring Two-Face, you would have had the opportunity to hear the great vocal talents of Richard Mall, who has died, has passed away, a 6'8" actor famous for his wonderful role as Bull Shannon on Night Court, which is always one of those things that has to be pointed out to me. I loved Bull. I thought he was just so much fun and such a great character. And whenever I hear his name and Two-Face, I always want to picture him with the headphones in front of the mic, making expressions and just being this wonderfully animated guy. I'm just curious what your thoughts were on this final story for Obituary.
He would probably want to slap me upside the head, because I did not realize that he was the voice of Two-Face until now, which kind of goes to show how impressive the Batman animated series is, because they had such incredible, crazy voice talent that somebody who I should know was the voice, I don't. But yeah, I always associated him with Bull so much. I have memories of watching Night Court as a kid, and there'd be lots of times when my parents would make me go out of the room because there was something, I can't remember what it was. It makes me want to go back and rewatch the show, but he was always my favorite in Night Court. He just had a very kind of jovial essence about him, like the gentle giant type of personality in that. Yeah, so it's, again, here we go. We have another incredible loss. And judging by my news feeds on social media, he affected a lot of people. It really seemed to hit people hard. A lot of people were posting about him and about Night Court. So yeah, it's another sad loss.
It is, and I love the nostalgia that you remind me of when it comes to that show. It's a show that I didn't get to watch in its prime time. Again, same reasons as you. Certain things my parents were very clear we weren't watching. And then there was also just timing. I remember when it was still on regularly, I was getting jobs in high school, and it's like, hey, you know, do you watch this show? No, I work that night, and there is no DVR, and I don't, you know, and there's a limited space on the VCR scheduling for... All of that fun technology thing that we had to, you know, compensate or work around. But he was so animated, and I love that when they would start doing syndication, I could catch it at nights when I was working at a night job. And my grandmother, as she was passing and getting older, and you could see she had a throat tumor that was starting to really affect her. We could talk about the show because it was a show she loved. Mm-hmm. She loved Harry, and she also loved Mel Torme, who was a regular guest on there. But because of that, we could connect over characters like Bull, who was, as you pointed out, had like this like childlike enthusiasm and joy. So animated with the expressions, you know, I mean, the guy, he could look angry and sad and happy. he brought that like childlike honesty, I think. His vocal talents later on doing stuff, as the story mentions, from Freakazoid to Superman, Justice League, Batman. Amazing work, you know. I think you were right to say that, you know, he was part of those memories that go with a show like Night Court that affected so many people. I think it's, you know, tantamount to without the same notoriety as someone like, you know, Betty White or, you know, a character who is just so recognizable and iconic for those moments that they created for us. We do have another side of the news coin, where we're going to move into our movie stories. We have some announcements. Among them, we finally have a release date for Aquaman, the Lost Kingdom, which has been delayed by 2 days. So less than we finally have a date, but we have an updated date. I set that up incorrectly. However, it's now December 22nd, which is kind of like closer to Christmas. So maybe it's a nice thing. And then it gives you a little breather before it's like crazy presents time. I don't know. You know, Brad, what did you think about the idea of this adjustment to the
release? Well, I'm just glad that it wasn't pushed back further because of the strike. Because there was a lot of talk of that happening. But I'll take 2 days. I don't really understand what goes through the minds of these studio guys. According to the article, they wanted to push it back a few days because it was too close to Wonka. And I don't know if that means that they think Wonka is going to do really well or that it's getting more of a positive buzz than they thought. You know, maybe they just, whatever reason, I'm sure there was a reason for it. And I guess it's also now a little bit closer to Color Purple, which is actually coming out on Christmas Day. But there's probably going to be less overlap of audience between Color Purple and Aquaman than Aquaman and Wonka. So maybe they thought, let's stick it in the middle. But, you know, whatever, I'm gonna see it. Might not. I usually try to see these movies on the day they come out, but I'll probably be away, probably be at family Christmas, so I might not get to see it until after that anyway. So I'm just glad it wasn't pushed back to next year. So I'll take it. 2 days isn't a big deal.
I agree with you on that. I am glad it's not pushed back further. I do understand the things that you're mentioning that they point out in the article. The idea of how they're balancing it between the two projects you mentioned, Wonka, as well as The Color Purple. Yeah, I don't really understand what the reasoning is. And it's harder when they're like, yeah, we're doing it because of this. We're not saying why, if it's going to affect it, positive or negative or anything else. We're just doing it because of that. You fill in the blanks. So other than, okay, new mystery, if you want to spend time working on that, just change the date on your calendar. Go from the 20th to the 22nd. And like you said, that it is closer to Christmas might make it harder for some to see it on that opening day. For others, maybe it's an easier time when more of the family will be closer because it's closer to the holiday. And maybe more of the family can go all at once to see. However, if it's for you, we'd love to hear what you think and also what your experience is like when you get the chance to go, if you do go see it on that day. Brad, that includes you, my friend. You're not removed from that opportunity. If you go and see it on the day, you know me, I'm going to be kind of hanging at home, wait for it to pop up on streaming. And that's just, that's my gig. But I love living vicariously through you, through others. So let me be part of your world. With that, we also have our second movie story. Now, this goes in a completely different direction. We were just talking about projects coming up on the screen. Here's one that could have been, maybe could be. I mean, it's not saying that it's definitely not ever gonna happen. However, Matthew Vaughn pitched a Superman trilogy, and there's some interesting details in there. I'm going to allow Brad to share whatever your thoughts are on some of those details. I'll add in mine as well, but clearly it was inferring, as the article suggests, a twist on what has been an established timeline for the Man of Steel.
I'm going to put a caveat on this, but I think it would have been a disaster. I really like Matthew Vaughn's work, but at New York Comic Con this year, there was a Matthew Vaughn spotlight panel where he came and got interviewed because he's promoting Argyle that's coming out soon. So it was a big spotlight on his work, and he had a lot of things to say about his experience working with the X-Men and why it didn't work out and how kind of crummy the studio system is. I think that his experience trying to get these films made under that studio system, it would have been horrible. He would have hated it. They probably would have taken control back and had other people finish it. It wouldn't have been good. add to kind of his own maverick way of filmmaking and how he works, combine that with the changes he wanted to make with making Krypton not explode until Superman was older, things like that. I love Matthew Vaughn's work, but I think this would have been just bad all around. And it wouldn't have been his fault either necessarily, but I'm kind of glad that it never got off the ground.
I was wondering if, because it reminded me that it mentioned that he was at New York Comic Con and you were there recently. Yes. Yep. So, when you were bringing that up, I was like, that's right. I had been wanting to get your take on that. And I'm glad you brought up the spotlight panel, because you bring to light some things that I think might not be fresh on everyone's mind when they first think of his name. They're going to go to whatever is the most relevant for them. But if you look back on some of the details, the way you're describing it, getting a chance to think about, oh, okay, well, you know, there's what he's done. And there's also what he recently said about his studio experience with working on other projects. How would that change maybe what he brings in to working on a Superman trilogy, and also what sort of the relationship would be with the studios if there's already an expectation that there's going to be challenges and difficulties. And then we have a timeline in which Krypton blows up when Superman's an adult, which I feel would need more explanation for me to get that story off the ground. Why as an adult, what's the importance? Make me believe that it's important to tell us this story this way for whatever reason. Otherwise, I do feel like without a strong sense of that, I wouldn't know how you're going to present it to fans who are going to be in the same place. And without a solid answer, you're working against the current. And you're wondering why you're not getting anywhere, let alone why you're going backwards. So I think that's some interesting takes, man. I appreciate that. I hadn't considered some of those ideas, but now that I am, I'm like, wow, we dodged a bullet there. We're not the Man of Steel. It doesn't bounce off of us the same way. So with that in mind, we want to be grateful when we do dodge. I love the fact that we get to shift now into our TV and streaming news, because we have some amazing updates, including a Bodies trailer. That is the upcoming project available on Netflix. It's the newest adaptation of Vertigo project that probably is going to have some anticipation built into it, simply because of how successful recent projects like Sandman were, where people are going, okay, so you kind of crushed it with that. Show us what you've got with Bodies. I'm actually not as familiar, but I was really intrigued with the trailer, so I was curious Brad.
Well, this already hit Netflix. It's doing.
Oh right, well. I'm sorry. You're right. This is the next season. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And what's funny is, it totally didn't click with me that it was based on the comic, but I've never read the comic. But the premise, I saw the premise, you know, it came up on my things, the recommendations, and I was reading, you know, the different times, the different killers, and Jack the Ripper, and that seemed fascinating to me. So I put it right at my list, and I plan on starting it this week. So now I really want to go and find the graphic novel, because it's so intriguing. There's certain stories that I like better as comics, and I just want to see how they're both present, how the story is presented in both mediums. So yeah, I totally slipped that this was based on a Vertigo comic.
I didn't even know that there was more than, or I forgot as we were talking about that there was more than one season. I'm realizing that as I was reading it through, that's right. It was saying I'm going to miss the detail where it was letting me know that, but I didn't realize it was already out October 19th. Okay. I wasn't even aware of the title. It totally slipped me by. I have to figure out when it came out and what I missed. And there's a lot of good ones.
The perils of living in an age where there's so much content, because something with such a nondescript name as Bodies.
Right.
Really easy for it to slip through the cracks, whether it's a book, whether it's a movie, whether it's, you know, whatever it may be. I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah, and yet at the same time, this is the guy who's taking over the Flash, and you know, clearly is writing amazing projects as well. But as you pointed out, like, you know, I did it the other day. I went into the shop and I was like, oh, there's some cool artists I want to catch up with who are doing signings, Justin Greenwood and a few others. And I was like, cool. And I remember even thinking like, oh, I think there was a couple of projects that I just saw were out that I wanted. Oh, the Alan Scott book, totally spaced. Got a bunch of books, got home and I'm like, oh, I forgot. Oh, and I wanted to get the Jay Garrick. Oh, and I forgot. So I'm going to be hopping online later trying to click, and Bodies is now on my list of stuff I need to find.
Yeah, and that brings something else to mind is that I've been stepping away from buying issues in the store and I've been just waiting for the trades to come out. Usually DC will have some kind of marketing tie-in. They did with The Kitchen. If you remember The Kitchen, that was a I believe it was Vertigo or DC book. And they had like a special movie edition of that when it came out. So I'm surprised they didn't throw out some advertisements or something. I'm just wondering if I just missed them because I haven't gotten a lot of the monthly books recently.
That's a possibility too. I also sometimes don't get my monthly books until like a month or two late. Like, so then I see them and I'm like, that came out last month. Okay, I have to find this thing that I didn't even realize I missed the advertising on. Every once in a while, it's like pulling yourself up from the thing and going like, wait, where are we? Has this all been moving? Did someone not tell me? So Thais, this has been fun for me to catch up. However, for those who are not familiar, I'm just going to pause for a second and let you know that what I was able to glean, and Brad, fill in any gaps here, but essentially, we're following a story that takes place over four time frames, one in 1890 London, one in 1940 London, one in 2014, and one in 2015. And in each one, we have an investigation of some form taking place. We've got inspectors, we've got detective sergeants, and it looks like in the final one, it sounds like it might be something completely different because it doesn't mention a specific investigator in the plotline breakdown, but essentially it follows the narrative of four stories that are taking place in four different timelines. But any great story that's going to do that probably has a connection. So with that in mind, that's about where I'm going to set it up and leave it at. That's as much as I was able to glean. Sounds very intriguing. I'm very curious. And Brad, if you happen to find the collected somewhere and you're like, dude, got it, like, don't hesitate to let us know and tag. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who's going to be like, so where's that link, yo? Can I get that copy too? Or if you got the DC Universe app, maybe you can find it on the app. I'm going to make a note to myself and do that. Hey, while I'm jotting that note, I'm also going to let you know that we have a second story for our TV and streaming news. The announcement and release of, like, I want to say this in the best way because it feel like it needs it, but it's October. So without any sort of spook, Merry Little Batman has a December debut. Merry Little Batman. It's got a great Christmas sort of feel to it. It feels funny to be saying in October, but it also sounds just wonderfully adorable. Detective Noir-styled Cape Crusader. Brad, what's your take on this announcement and what we can look forward to in December?
I'm a sucker for Christmas. I am not bah humbug at all. I love it. And it seems like, for whatever reason this year, there's not a whole lot of super hyped Christmas-themed movies or TV shows, so it just doesn't seem like there's a lot out. But this is something that's going to be fun, so I'm looking forward to this. This is probably something that I will watch probably on the day it comes out, just for a little bit of a break from the heavy stuff, you know. So yeah, it seems like it'll be a lot of fun. And this is kind of going to be a preview of what's going to happen, because Amazon's getting more and more DC stuff for whatever deals they're working out now. So this is one of the, I think this is the first thing that we're going to see, followed by the Cape Crusader whenever that comes out. And I know that people are really waiting for that. So I'm looking forward to this. What about you?
I'm curious about it. Yes, it's interesting that it was originally going to be an exclusive on Max, and now it's also, it's going to be only on Prime Video, or it's going to be also on Prime Video. I wasn't quite sure.
That's a good question. I think now, don't quote me on this, but I think it's only on Amazon.
Okay. So December 8th, it's available in 240 countries. And as you pointed out, they've already picked up the Batman Caped Crusader. So now that we've got Merry Little Batman, I agree with you. I am not bah humbug at all. I'm more than happy to jump into any Christmas theme thing and be like, yeah, let's go. Let's go. Now, I will say, when it comes to certain Hallmark Christmas movies and Christmas romance movies, I draw a line. I do draw a line. But I did enjoy Violent Night was a fun one, and a couple of others that really just let me have as much fun as I want to with Christmas. And I'll still watch Elf probably once a year if you put it on, and a few others. This one sounds adorable. Young Damian Wayne finds himself alone in Wayne Manor on Christmas Eve. He must transform into Little Batman in order to defend his home and Gotham City. Has a tiny bit of a feel of Home Alone. Just a touch. Batman-esque. And he must defend his home and Gotham City from crooks and supervillains intent on destroying it. Interestingly enough, you've got a great cast of voices as well as an interesting screenplay. You've got Morgan Evans from Teen Titans Go, but also Jace Ricci from The Doom That Came to Gotham, which I thought was a really interesting noir-style twist on Batman, sort of, on some fun Batman ideas, but also bringing in the Lovecraft feel. So what they can do with the sort of fun and frenzy that we can expect from a project like this, I'll put it on my list. I might watch it on the day or within a week or so. As you mentioned, plenty of heavy content out there. Why not crack a smile and have a bit of a laugh as we get closer to, festive holiday, as it's supposed to be. So that's our final TV streaming news. I've made my note for bodies. I'm ready to move on to comic book news. We have some announcements, and this first one just, it makes me smile, but it also makes me sad because it makes me think of how broke I'll be once I try and collect all of these, because Elseworlds is back. This was one of those great 90s things that I don't look back on and go, well, it was the 90s. I think back on, think, yes, that was one of those moments where 90s comics just got it so right and did it so well. The fact that it's coming back, very exciting for me. Brad, what was your take on this announcement? What we can look forward to in 2024?
Oh, yeah. I was so psyched to go to this panel at New York Comic Con where they announced all the
stuff. Please tell us more.
It was so much fun. People were going crazy. It just makes sense, especially now with the way DC's going with kind of the Omniverse and everything. It makes sense to bring back Elseworlds, and they're bringing some really cool stuff. There's a sequel to Gotham by Gaslight that kind of expands the world. It's called the Kryptonian Age. So we get to see some of Metropolis. We're going to get to see the Gotham by Gaslight Justice League characters. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And that's just would be such a fun world to play in. So I'm psyched for that. We're getting a sequel to, well, not necessarily a sequel, but more of a spinoff for Dark Knights of Steel, where Deathstroke is like a Viking roaming around trying to kill for money. But then it's looking like in a lone wolf and cub situation where he has to protect a child. So I think it's called Deathstroke All Winter, or Dark Knights Metal, not Dark Knights Metal, Dark Knights of Steel All Winter.
Yes, that's, you got it.
That's going to be a lot of fun. There is a Nightfire, a Batman series that deals with time travel, which would be interesting. Because that's, Batman can be such a grounded character. Throwing him in time travel, that could be a little bit of fun. There is a continuation of DC vs. Vampires where the original series kind of left on a cliffhanger. Barbara Gordon is Queen of the Vampires now, so now it's her and what happens and the heroes that rise up to challenge that. There is a Batman the Barbarian series, which is kind of imagining Batman as a barbarian, like a Conan type character. That could be fun. You see, this is you can't go wrong with Batman. There's just can never be enough Batman. It's just
right. The way it is.
There's going to be a Green Lantern series called Green Lantern Dark, where it's kind of the dark fantasy world. It's a post-apocalyptic world. Magic is all gone. All that's left is the Green Lantern and her journey to bring the world back from the edge. But yeah, at the panel, everybody was excited about all this stuff. There was not one thing that I think that got more praise than the other. Although I was a little surprised that the whole room didn't completely erupt when they announced the Gotham by Gaslight sequel. Maybe that's to show at my age. That's been a while now. But I think that was everything. Just want to check to see if I missed anything. Yeah, because it's been a few weeks since Comic-Con at this point, so I just wanted to double check. But yeah, but it was a fun panel, and I think these books are gonna be a lot of fun. I've said this before. It's like, well, one thing that makes DC fun is the thing that the risks that they're willing to take with the characters and throw them in things like Elseworld. You don't really see that in Marvel, and I think since I've been doing this podcast, DC's been really good at that and showing different sides and different renditions of the characters that can be kind of outside of continuity. And these are some books that I think are just going to be right up there, the rest of those.
No, I agree. They did so many amazing things when the first set came out. I loved reading all these wonderful takes on iconic characters, seeing Batman and Superman in these different worlds, watching the Justice League take on new challenges, and set in ways where you know the core character, but you're seeing them in a clearly original set of circumstances and how they find their way through. You did probably the best description I can think of for all of those titles and really made it clear, you know, just how much we have. Plus, they were even saying there's a second wave plan. They haven't really announced those other titles for, but they're expecting more. And we're getting some re-releases of some of the original titles, it sounds like, too. So quite the mix. If you didn't get a chance to enjoy it before, you have a chance to, you know, get it this time around, experience what the original was like, as well as these new versions. And that's just the beginning of the comic book news we have coming. DC Power is returning to celebrate Black History Month, picking this one up from over at Games Radar. We've got a new Far Sector story from N.K. Jemisin and Jamal Campbell, which, man, Far Sector, that was such a lovely spin on a classic. Like, I love when there's this concept of, like, the Lantern Corps, and then you have this great moment where one of the little blue guys does something interesting, creates a ring that's different, sets us with this great set of characters, and set in a world without emotion. Yeah, there were some beautiful moments there. I can only imagine seeing that character brought to life now in DC Power. I was blabbering. What was your take on the announcement of this story, and what else we get to enjoy, my friend?
Well, I think everybody's going to come back for a new Far Sector series. I think that kind of blew people away. That was just... it's considered a modern classic at this point. So I think that's going to bring a lot of people in. But you had me at John Ridley. He's part of the creative team for these books.
Yeah.
For this book, and I'm down for that regardless. And again, not to sound like a broken record, but nobody does a good anthology book like DC. And this is going to be another one of those. You can tell just by the, you know, get little flashes of the art and covers and things like that. And it looks amazing. I think this is going to be a big seller. you know, like I said, that the teams are great. And we don't have that long to wait, really, when it comes right down to it. It comes out January 30th. So that's kind of just around the corner. So it's be here before you know it.
Close enough we can get excited and not feel. Yeah. I also loved at the end of the story how it says Joe Moline is one of the best Green Lanterns of all time. It's just like stated. It's like a fact. It was an amazing series. It did blow everyone away. Such an original take. As you pointed out, I think a wonderful descriptor, modern day classic, probably fits it to a T. Such a great collection, as you pointed out. When you bring in John Ridley as part of the creative team, when you have amazing artists like Denny Cowan or Jamal Campbell, who blew me away with Far Sector, continues to blow me away with the different stuff I see him, you know, popping up on. It's going to be a beautiful book. The last one was gorgeous, totally stunned me. This one I know will be just as phenomenal. And as you pointed out, January 30th, great way to kick off Black History Month. Great celebration. Keeping the continuing just unbelievable announcements coming our way. If you ever wonder what would have happened if people had picked up the phone and voted differently when Jason Todd's life was hanging on the line, you have an opportunity to read the story. I always wondered what happened to that story. What did they do with it? They said they had it ready to go, but they never released it because fans called up and made a decision. So now, Batman number 428, the alternate version, is going to be made available. And you get to read the story of what happened if Jason Todd survived. Brad, what do you think about this decision? Did you hear anything about it at Comic-Con?
And I did. I was at the panel where this was announced, and the crowd did erupt. 30 years, over 30 years, they've been sitting on this art. I'm surprised that they have not released it before. Or that fans have demanded it. I guess because I think they were kind of okay with the decision that the voters made. What I didn't realize is that it was closer than I thought. I thought people voting Jason Todd dead far outweighed people voting him alive, but that wasn't the case. It was a slimmer margin than I was realizing. I can't wait for this. I remember when the first one came out, actually in the stores, you know, on the spinner racks when they had them in grocery stores and things like that. It was right there. I always kind of wondered what the alternate take was. And I remember thinking back when it was going on, I bet they would have to have the art done and everything. So why don't they just release it to show what would have happened? But now finally we're finally getting it. It's an idea that time has come. So I'm definitely excited for it. What about you?
And with good reason. And as you pointed out, I mean, 72 votes deciding the fate, and that knowledge probably not being really something people, you know, focused on once the decision was made. It was just like the majority has voted, that's it. But I also find it interesting, as you pointed out, what happens for 30 years? Why now? You know, and I do feel it's one of those things that since the story's been rewritten from how it originally ended, you know, with Jason coming back, with us getting, you know, Red Hood and a pretty amazing character in Jason Todd, just overall, like what he's done since he came back. It almost feels like so many of those hard and fast rules that we used to stick to. No Bucky comes back. No Jason Todd comes back. You know, no Barry Allen. Well, okay, guess what? All of these things have since been undone, and the history is better for it. The stories are better for it. Fans are better for it. I would imagine the companies are pretty happy with the response and the projects. I can only imagine if every single one of those people you heard erupting in cheers is telling 10 friends or posting on a site. It would be really interesting to see what the response is like. 30 years is a long way to look back in history and wonder if you made the right choice. So I'm curious to see how it's going to shape out. But I can imagine you'll be putting this one on your list to pick up.
Yeah.
So we have more and more to talk about. In fact, it might seem like John Constantine is always doing something and disappearing into the ether, only to come back, and he's back once again. He's got a new Hellblazer Mini, and he might be paying a visit to the Sandman, according to this story we're picking up from Games Radar. What did you think about this announcement? Also, once again, another Cy Spurrier written project. The guy's everywhere right now.
Yeah, I can't wait. Anything that goes into the Sandman universe, I'm there. And the idea of having to reclaim some of Sandman's sand from his pouch, great concept for a story. I this may be Black Label, but I also hope it has the Sandman universe little logo thing that they do on the covers. I hope that they make it like an official thing like that. I don't see why they wouldn't. Mixing Neil Gaiman's best creation with one of Alan Moore's great creations, I'm there. You had me at hello. Yeah, I'm down for this for sure.
I can only imagine too that there could be repercussions. Could this be also the kindling that lights the fire for a future Justice League Dark series or something else to spin out of it? Or am I just, you know, playing with straw and hoping for a roaring bonfire? Who's to say? I do know that when you talk about mixing classic characters like this, you're talking about some pretty big forces. The ramifications could be huge. I also loved what you mentioned, the idea of it being a Black Label, but still having that wonderful Sandman universe bar across the top, giving just a wonderful twist. I mean, at that point, you almost want him to give a little homage for Vertigo on the side, but we're not going to keep pushing the boundaries too far. We'll be happy with what we get. And as you pointed out, what a great plot line. What a great concept, right? Just a little bit of sand. Come on, man. I don't need it all. Just a couple grains. Just enough. Just enough for this thing that I need. We're going to get a chance to find out in more than one ways in 2024 just how good DC continues to be when it comes to anthologies. Because we mentioned we've got the DC Power Celebration coming up January 30th. Well, February not only has Black History Month, but it also has that one day when all romantics just get a little bit weirder when it comes to romance. Either they're more romantic or less, or just weird about it, however it might be. I don't know if it gets any weirder than a title, How to Lose a Guy Gardner in 10 Days, but I'm sure it's going to have wonderful, humorous, delightful anthology comics that we have come to love and enjoy. What do you think about this newest entrance to the holiday tradition?
I think the title's brilliant. And it seems like the theme is going to be like 90s and aughts romantic comedies. So that could be fun. Obviously, it's going to be a lot lighter than some of their anthologies, you know, so it's going to be hilarious. And I think they're Valentine's Day anthologies are one of the ones that put it was between like that and the giant issues that they sold in Walmart were the things that really made people start noticing the anthology books. And then you had the Pride books and things like that. But this is kind of almost what started it all. So I think it's going to be funny and worth a read.
I definitely think so. And if you're just looking for art, you've got Amanda Connor doing original cover, variant cover art by Ariel Diaz, Christian Ward, Dustin Nguyen. Pick your favorite, pick your poison, however you like to celebrate or commiserate when it comes to the Valentine's Day holiday. We've got some options for you. We're going to let you enjoy the ones that work best for you. And in the meantime, we also have some great announcements when it comes to the Superman Superstars initiative for 2024. I love this twist. They did it with the Kamandi series, Last Boy on Earth, a while back, and it's the idea of handing off story arcs throughout the season. We're going to have Action Comics featuring some amazing collaborators. Brad, did you hear anything about this at New York Comic Con?
This is actually a panel I did not make it into. So this, I was not there in person, unfortunately. But I'm just glad that Jason Aaron's coming to DC. That's his Bizarro story. I'm there for it. I still stick by that his run on Thor was one of the best superhero books maybe ever. It's up there, and he definitely has the talent. I can't wait to see what he does with Bizarro. So, I'm super excited about that one in particular.
Well, and he's also teaming up with John Timms for the art. Quite a lovely match in nerd comic heaven. As you pointed out, also, I appreciate you mentioning that, Jason Aaron making his debut for DC Comics. And for fans who want to get a taste of his work, yes, you can find out what he's doing with our marvelous competitor in the past with Thor, or you can pick up this new collection and get a chance to see what his role is going to be like as part of this initiative. It sounds like we've got a series of arcs. Brainiac's involved, always makes things interesting, should be a lot of fun. Now, we also have one final comic book category story, and that one's coming from Nicole Maines. You might know her best as Dreamer from Supergirl. She's been doing some wonderful work, constantly appearing, I believe, in the Pride anthologies, which is just really, I think, great persistence. But now we also have a release date for her upcoming project. Brad, what did you think about this announcement and what it means? Especially curious what your thoughts are, this tie-in that we have to Galaxy, the Prettiest Star. I didn't get a chance to read that. I feel like maybe you did.
Yeah, it was good. I'm glad that they're bringing the character back. And I've been wanting more info on this book. It comes out on my birthday, so that might be a birthday present that I have to pick up for myself.
Mark your calendars. Please say happy birthday to on his birthday. I mean, we basically just told you when it's going to be. Find the article. It's available on CBR. Go ahead, man. It comes out on your birthday.
Yeah, April 2nd. Nope. I'm really glad that she's writing it, because there really wouldn't be a Dreamer character if it wasn't for her. Nobody knows the character like her, so why wouldn't she write it? It's not like as good as Paul Dano's Riddler Year One was. He wasn't the first Riddler. He didn't kind of create that character in the same way that Nicole Maines did with Dreamer. So I wanted to see the character come into the broader DC universe. So hopefully that will happen as well. And, you know, the Prettiest Star, that was something else that that I thought was a character that we should see more of. So combining those two, it's going to be good. And DC has also knocked it out of the park with these more YA books. I'm certainly not the intended audience for a lot of these, but I still find them enjoyable, and I think that says a lot. They should be the same way.
Agreed. The YA books have been phenomenal. I also love that this is the story that gives you Dreamer's origin. We finally get to see her origin story. Hey, someone's got a kitty who's going to be part of our podcast. You can hear my dogs whining in the background. There's some dishes going. What can I say, folks? It's a family affair. You're getting a little slice of life from all of us here today. I think Dreamer is really important character, and I love the persistence. I also appreciate the understanding from the actor who created it. I think when you think about how important Nicole Maines has been for keeping this character alive through the Pride anthologies, you know, subsisting and persisting since Supergirl, and now bringing out this original, who knows what the future can continue to hold if she keeps like saying, hey, look, there's stories to be told with this character, and there are fans out there who want these stories. They're going to pick these up. This could just be the beginning for more projects to feature Nia Noll. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it does. And I'm curious to see how this can continue the success that we've seen from DC's YA books. They have been phenomenal. Hopefully this is just yet another strong chapter. Now, for our final story, you're really going to have to rely on Brad for this one, because I still have not had a gaming system in probably 20-odd years, 25. And with that in mind, the announcement that the Batman Arkham trilogy for the Nintendo Switch has been delayed until November, I'm kind of at a loss. I don't know how long this has been something that's been important for folks, or also what it would mean to have it on the Switch. I do know that those who like the Switch have mentioned it being, you know, a really great platform. But what did it mean for them that you know, they were expecting the Arkham trilogy, and now we've got a delay?
Delays in video games are seldom a bad thing. other than just having to wait longer. I think the games generally come out better. I think that there are certain members of the gaming press that have gotten their hands on early versions of this port over to the Switch and did not like it. So for whatever reason, now the Switch doesn't have the power of even a PS4. So that's, which in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter because the games that are out on the Switch are incredible. The new Zelda game is considered by many, Tears of the Kingdom is considered by many to be one of the best video games ever made. So you don't have to worry about that, but it does present a challenge when you convert games like this to the Switch. And I think that's what they're coming to find when doing this, is I think it's a little tricky. So I think at the end, a wait is a good thing because they can perfect it and they can make it better. One thing I do like is that it's going to have all the DLC. So it's going to have all the side stories that were downloadable and not part of the game when you first got it, that you had to pay extra for. This comes included in the package. So I think that's a draw for me because I've never played a lot of the DLC for the games. I played all three games all the way through, but not the DLC. So that would be fun to rediscover that. But I just think that just fine-tuning it and making it as good as possible.
I like the positive spin. I didn't even think about, you know, what that might mean for the playability or the quality or things like that. But I can imagine, as you mentioned, that they're going to give early release so that those who can test it out and give some feedback, and if the feedback isn't positive, push back, especially if it's things that you can solve in a relatively short amount of time. As it is, you'll still be able to get the game on its release December 1st. So hopefully that's not too long of a wait. And based on what you just said, it sounds like the wait is worth it. You're going to end up with a better quality product in the end if you're just willing to wait a little bit longer. Appreciate the context, too. I did not realize that the Switch was a lower power as far as performance, but it shouldn't be a factor given the different things that are available. And as you pointed out, this is a package that's designed to have all of these other additions that were later added on that you can get all as part of one set. It sounds like you might be picking it up.
Yeah. Here's another thing that's involved with that is that they're going to, sometimes when they re-release a game like this, it'll be a little cheaper. This one will not be. So that's another thing that I think that they're working on, is making it worth the money. Worth that extra, because it's probably going to be $60-$70. So
if it's not cheaper, it better be worth it.
Right. And me personally, since I've played the three main games, I don't know if it's worth it to pick up the Switch version just when I could technically go out and get a different game that I have not played at all before. So that's just my own personal feelings about it. Because to me, video games are such a time sink. They take a while to complete. So if I'm going to beat a video game, I'm going to move on to another game. I'm not going to go back and play again. So at this point, it would be just for those little bits of DLC. So I don't know if I would pick this up on the Switch or not, but that's just my own. That's just how I consume video games, I guess.
No, I appreciate the positioning. I mean, not something I would have thought about, but you're right. If the whole point of the game is to enjoy it and then finish it, you don't go back and do it again. And if you do, it's very rare to do so for the reasons that you mentioned. Maybe it's worth the cost. But if you're going to offer this to people and you're going to say it's not going to be a lower cost option, then yeah, the quality better match up. Hey,
this really is great, though, for Nintendo fans that stick with Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Because it's been a long time since Nintendo had a lot of third-party games. So with the Wii U, it was all Nintendo. It was very few other companies making games. It was basically, you played Nintendo games. Now with the Switch, a lot of these other developers are coming in. So there's probably Nintendo players that have never had a chance to play the Arkham games. So this is a perfect, this is perfect for them, because for that, anybody who hasn't, and I would say run out and get this. It's absolutely worth the money if you have never played the games before.
Well said. Hey, and a great note to end on. Folks, that's our last story. This has been the DC Comics News Podcast, episode number 186. I think that's what I said at the beginning. We'll see how close I was. Maybe I have to do an edit on that. However, it's been a great time hanging out with you. Brad, you know, just given the knowledge you were dropping as far as the video game industry and this upcoming release, folks might want to follow up with you on that or any of the other great stuff you've been talking about with us today. Where's the best place they can find you and say hi, ask a question or two?
Well, you can find me writing news reviews, dccomicsnews.com. You can also find me writing the occasional review on Merc with the Movie Blog, which is our editor's other website. You can find me on this podcast. And when we get back to recording Mad Love, I'll be on that. I'm on the occasional I'm the Night episode as well recently. So those are all part of the DC Comics News Podcast Network. And you can follow me on Twitter or X or whatever Elon Musk is calling it now at FlickyB1. Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find old reviews and content I've written for DC Comics News on dccomicsnews.com. But as far as me, probably my newest kind of centralized location, got a new website up from a good friend who helped me build it. And just want to give a quick thanks to Lee. It's storieswithseth.com. You can find pretty much any way you want to interact with me on there. Links to all the different socials. And then just because it's out and I'm excited for it, it's a free comic book you can get. I have a new comic out called Spellcasters. It's on Amazon and Apple Books. Just type in Spellcasters Major League Magic and let me know what you think. But yeah, Stories with Seth, the easiest place to visit. Find your favorite social, message me from there. As far as DC Comics News, just follow the at symbol, DC Comics News, capital D, capital C, capital C, O-M-I-C-S, capital N-E-W-S, on whatever your favorite social media platform is, Twitter, Tumblr, YouTube, whatever they might be. Find DC Comics News, hit the tag, tag us on all the favorite stuff you have, whether it's your covers of comics we've talked about, your copies of content we've talked about, or just your response to one of our episodes, and let us know what you thought about what we had to say now, in the past, in the future. And make sure that you subscribe to the DC Comics News Podcast. You can catch up on all the great stuff we've already done, things like episodes of Mad Love, episodes of I Am the Night, the Batman the Animated Series, as well as past episodes and future episodes of DC Comics News Podcast. When you subscribe, you always get the newest, freshest stuff right there in your feed. And you get to hear what we're thinking. And we love to hear from you about what you're thinking, about what we're thinking. With that, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up with a little reminder. We always like you to keep it in the back of your head between now and the next episode. And that is to always
read
more comics. With that, Brad, thank you so much for an amazing time hanging out, talking about all these great stories. Thank you to everyone out there for listening. You too, buddy. Thank you.